Okay, welcome back, everybody. A couple of quick announcements before we begin. I forgot to mention that I'll be at La Casa de Maria, and there's a flyer in the back. That'll be next Wednesday. It is 9:30 to 3:30, and it's an extension of what we're doing here. It's the power of love in our lives, and it's by donation. Anybody who'd like to come, we'd love to have you. So that's at Casa de Maria. And then secondly, I have my poetry class at Adult Ed. If you're interested, that's Tuesday mornings from 10 to 12. And you can sign up online at Santa Barbara City College Adult Ed, or you can sign up at the office. Question came up during the break about how you feel love, and so that takes me to another part of the topic that I want to go into. And love is not defined in one single way. When we look at it as individuals, so we could say two ways of looking at love. One way is shall we say, the one-size-fits-all. So it's love as caring connection shown in an unconditional way. From my perspective, there is no conditional love. Conditional love would be the equivalent of I approve of you and you please me, more like liking. But if it's real love, it has to be unconditional. In other words, not based on what you do, which means it does not require reciprocation. It's not you have to love me back or else I won't love you. It's not reciprocal in that way. And I have my originally I had a quote from the poet W.H. Auden, which they didn't want me to put in the book because we had to get permission, so I rewrote it in my own way. But anyway, I'll give you his version. If equal affection cannot be, let the more loving one be me. Imagine saying that. And that would be real love. It doesn't have to be equal. So let's just say not necessarily equal. And it's shown in it's tailored to what the other person understands as love. It's not, I did this for your own good. This is how love is shown. It has to be able to be understood and read, R-E-A-D, by the other person as love. So, love from a point of view of everyone, unconditional, not based on reciprocation, and tailored to the needs of others. But then, in addition, there is love as felt individually, and this will be the way you first experienced it. So you want to ask yourself, how did you first experience love? Because in whatever way you first experienced it, that gave you your personal definition of it. So I'll use myself as an example because someone asked about this. And I felt it when I noticed that my grandmother and other relatives simply stayed with me. So their presence felt like being loved. And so later in life, I noticed that I will sometimes manipulate a situation to get someone to stay with me. Like, just be physically present? You want to go to a movie? No, let's just stay here. But it's boring to stay here. Oh, that's all right. Let's stay here. And what I'm doing is I'm trying to make somebody look like grandma who didn't go out to movies, just stayed home. And to another person, that seems boring. But I enjoy it immensely. So I come from this original experience of just stay with me, no matter how boring it is. And then I feel loved. Everybody see how this works? So you want to ask yourself, well, how did I first feel loved? And am I trying now to get the love I originally had from other people? And it's okay to do this as long as you simply admit it. So if I were to say, well, what feels like love to me is when someone wants to spend time with me, not necessarily doing anything, just being around, then like hang out together, that idea. And of course, I'm not fooled, because knowing myself, I also know that if somebody does hang out with me, I start to get scared. And so then I'm getting antsy, and let's turn on the TV. So another part of this is what will feel like love will also sometimes bring up the fear of it, because there's something in us that becomes uncomfortable if the love is full on and if we don't have control over how long it will be expressed and how. Everybody follow? This is why it's such a complex topic. True love casts out fear is a way of saying, once you are ready to receive love fully, then you will have no fear. But it's a rare person who has gotten to that point, because it means giving up control completely. Even my subtitle, I gave myself away right in the subtitle, Letting Love In Safely, but showing it recklessly. So when I'm in control of showing it, I'm going to be reckless. But when you show it to me, it has to be safe. Whereas I should have said, letting love in recklessly and showing it recklessly. Follow?
Yeah. I have two questions on the previous page.
Okay.
When you talk about caring and that equaling love, for many of us, we grew up with caring looking like worry. And so we were over-worried over, and we tend to over-worry over others as a way of expressing love, if you could speak to that. And the other is the poem that you wrote saying to love more than the other. The other thing, and this may be more of a woman's issue, but this idea of self-sacrifice and martyr and how to balance those unhealthy aspects of caring and balance.
Mm-hmm. Very good questions, and I am going to go on to that in a later class, but I like the idea of our paying attention to the being worried over, because many of us had the kind of parents who were worried about us, and the caring felt like they were just kind of overwhelming us, scrutinizing us, being overly careful. Everybody follow what I mean there? And so then the love won't feel safe. And certainly we don't like it now as adults when people kind of fuss over us. Everybody get what I mean? Like, I have an example of this, my son, age 41. And these kids go out without a jacket. And I wasn't brought up that way. Of course, I also lived in Connecticut where you need a jacket. And so when I see him go out without a jacket, I say, Josh, aren't you going to put on a jacket? And he doesn't like it. He resents it. you know, because it's too parental. Everybody get it? And it's like worrying about him. So, I mean well. But it just doesn't work. But anyway, our parents were like that toward us sometimes, and so it was confusing. But remember that when they worried, it was because under that, they cared about us, but they lived in fear that something terrible might happen to us. Even though that wasn't necessarily what would happen, but they might have had that fear. So you have to be forgiving about it. Okay, and the second part of the question was about self-sacrifice. And it is true that in love, in the, shall we say, universal way of looking at it, it includes some kind of giving of oneself and putting others first. So in the biblical directive, love your neighbor as yourself, it could be interpreted as love your neighbor as much as you love yourself. But that's not what it really is about. It's actually love your neighbor as though he were yourself. So love him or her the way you would love yourself, and that will involve some type of sacrifice of yourself. But when it's all about sacrifice and you're just giving up your own sense of security for someone else, then it's no longer really working. Then it becomes more like codependency. Yeah.
Hi, Dave. I have a question on that same page. My understanding from, you know, other experiences and readings and starting to read your book is that love exists in relationship. So I don't understand how love can exist or certainly persist if it's non-reciprocated.
Okay, good question. It just goes on, whether the other responds the way you want or not, if it's real. It can't be erased by whatever the other person does. That would be an extension of the unconditional. Does this make sense, or am I missing something? Jim?
How about love your enemies?
Okay, so he's referring to the Sermon on the Mount, do good to those who hate you, love your enemies. That would be an example of non-reciprocal love. So maybe we can make this distinction. From the ego's point of view, which thrives on entitlement to reciprocity, this would not work. This kind of love, which is agape, what the Greeks call selfless love, when you care about others even if you hardly know them, but you design your life so that you will be there for them, which Christianity expanded, so it'd be there for everyone. From the ego point of view, none of this will work. This could only work. The ego won't get us there to this kind of love. This kind of love could only come from the deepest part of our psyche, which Jung called the higher self, which is in Buddhism is referred to as one's Buddha nature, one's, shall we say, enlightened self, where there is no separate self, but we're connected to everyone constantly. And it's also called a higher power. But the actual higher power is the deeper power that's in ourselves. There is a power in us, a capacity in us, to love unconditionally, without reciprocation, sacrificially at times, tailored to others' needs. And that quality is not coming from the ego, which is the Latin word for I. It comes from the sense of we. And everyone has this capacity, but not everybody expresses it. John.
Yeah, in The Road Less Traveled, Scott Peck defined love as wanting what was best for the other.
That's a really good one. So wanting what's best for the other would be like, I want the best to happen to you. I want your best good. I want what's best for you. That would be in this category. So now we're seeing what's meant by I live now no longer I. I live now no longer I as ego, but Christ lives in me. Christ as the exemplar of a new way of loving. Because remember at the Last Supper, he put aside the original commandment, which is love your neighbor as yourself. At the Last Supper, he said, I'm giving you a new commandment, love one another as I loved you. How did he love us? Unconditionally, whether or not we reciprocate. And certainly sacrificially. And it reaches each of us in our own individual way. He was saying, and always wanting our best good. And he was saying, basically, you can love this way too. So we go to Christ or Buddha or Saint Francis so that we can open the part of ourselves that is deeper than our ego. And everyone can do this. All it takes is awareness and practice. And we're going to be referring to some of the practices. I'm glad this came up because it's an important part of our whole topic. And it's good to see this distinction. So you will have your own individual way of being loved, and you will also feel loved the way everyone else does. Just as you have your own signature, and yet you can read all handwriting. Or almost all. I saw this movie once. I don't remember the name. Maybe My Little Chickadee. Anyway, it was Mae West. And she... it was a Western with W.C. Fields. Of course, it was a comedy. But there was a bandit who was roaming the countryside and creating havoc. And he wore a mask. And one night, when Mae West was taking a walk, as if she ever would, this bandit rode up to her, jumped off his horse, and kissed her. And later in the film, a man kisses her, and she realizes that's the man that is the bandit, because she recognizes the kiss. And she says, a man's kiss is his signature. So that is what I'm referring to. It's that you have a signature way of loving and a signature way of being loved. And then and that is from your story and your ego world. And then you have, shall we say, a calling to a bigger kind of loving, which is unconditional, doesn't depend on reciprocation, and so forth. And in addition to all this, I forgot to mention, it's universal. It leaves no one out. So that's why our little affirmation prayer is has the phrase without reserve.
In your mentioning that there's a signature way of loving and a signature way of being loved, does that dovetail well with the love languages?
Yes, he's referring to the book. Did you want to explain a little about it?
It's been a while since I taught that. It's 5 different love languages. Campbell's book, right?
Yeah, that some people
there's some people give and receive love in particular ways. And he tailored that to Christ in the different ways that he expressed love. Touch and physical closeness, encouraging words, help me.
And receiving gifts.
Gifts. And then I'd said words of encouragement, and then maybe also doing things for others.
Yes, that each person has a different way of reading the language of love.
Giving and receiving, right.
So it has to be tailored to the person.
Thank you.
For the person to get it. So you can give a gift to one person, and he just takes it for granted, no big deal. He doesn't feel anything from it, because in his language of love, gift giving, it was not included. He didn't have that experience in early life. But if he did, then he would feel loved if you gave him something. Everybody follow? Okay, any other? Okay, so I want to take a quick look over on page 4. I just want to walk you through how love is understood in many ways. And I have 6 specific examples. And it will help if you bring this book with you each time. And if you can do the readings, that enriches what we're talking about. Because I can't really go through all that's in the book. So I just kind of pick the high points. Anyway, love is a capacity, meaning that there's a potential in us to show love in our own personal way and in the universal, unconditional way. We have that capacity. And notice where I say, the capacity to love can't be canceled or erased by our past, no matter how damaging our experiences have been. They may have hurt us, our parents, or childhood experiences, may have hurt us in a way that now makes it hard to have a healthy relationship, but they were not able to cancel the chance that you still have to show love in some way to someone at some time. Nobody can take that. This is the basis of our hope. Secondly, it's a quality, it's a way of acting. I have a quote in here from Shakespeare. It is not love that isn't shown, something like that. He does not love who does not show his love. So it's a quality, a way of acting. For instance, I touched her lovingly shows how I touched her. And it's a commitment. Here also it's a verb. So don't think of love as a noun, like a platonic essence up in the sky. It is shown in action. So it's an ongoing and enduring dedication to acting toward others in a trustworthy way and in their best interest. That's what John brought up about the other person's interests become as important as yours. Then love is a purpose. It can serve as your life purpose. Instead of having as your purpose to be as successful as possible. It's to show as much love as you can in the course of your life. And then love is a calling. If you look toward the end of the paragraph, love can be felt as a calling, an impulse from within and beyond to make our personal contribution to the world. Then love is a grace. We do not accomplish such a magnificent feat entirely on our own. What feat? The feat of fulfilling the calling to show love in every way you can, universally and unconditionally. You wouldn't be able to do that just on your own. It comes as a grace. It's a gift. And we were all given this grace at birth, part of our human endowment. Top of page 6. Grace is the special help that seems to come to us from beyond our ego. It's from a source that transcends our power of control. We can't make it happen, but it can't help but happen when we're open to it. So grace is the opportunity that comes to you from a source beyond your own ego. I give the quotation from Shakespeare. The cause of this fair gift in me is wanting. So he's saying, when I look at myself, I just don't know how I deserved such wonderful love as you are giving me. It's a grace. It's a special gift. And then finally, love is a practice. It's up to us to do what it takes to show love. And there I have the 5 A's that we just talked about. Everybody follow? Okay. I wanted to move over to page 18. Because sometimes there's a confusion. Remember I talked about the 5 A's and how they are our original needs. So sometimes we get confused between need and love, or need and the object of our love. So if you look at toward the bottom there, I need someone. When you feel I need someone, and then you meet someone and you say, oh, I like you, you're desirable and you're available. When you put those two together, I need someone and you're desirable and available, it can feel like I'm in love with you. But you may actually be just getting feedback from your own need. And that's expressed in the next page, 19, look at the bottom of the second full paragraph. We recall the humorous lyric from the song At Long Last Love by Cole Porter. Is it a cocktail, this feeling of joy? Or is what I feel the real McCoy? What a great question. So he feels this infatuation. And he wonders, is this coming from the results of the cocktail, from alcohol? Or am I really finding somebody that I can love? And I point out that these infatuations and fascinations are certainly legitimate and enjoyable, but temporary. Okay, so I wanted to wind up with just something from the book. So if you can take a look on 31. And if you look at what's in italics, this is a way to begin the practice of showing the love that is in your deeper self. Can I take leave of my own thoughts and needs long enough to take an interest in and pay close attention to someone else? Can I focus on my own needs and appreciate their legitimacy? Do I accept others just as they are, or do I judge them? Do I accept myself as I am? Do I notice what people do for me and then remember to show appreciation? Do I appreciate myself? Can I show affection in physical ways that do not lead to sex? How can I take care of my own body and mind as a way of loving myself? Am I able to allow others to live in accord with their own deepest needs, values, and wishes, or do I try to control them? And finally, how does my life reflect who I am rather than what others have wanted or want me to be to please them? So what I've done there is I've taken each of the five A's, shown how it can be applied to us, because you cannot love others until you love yourself. So I take each of the five A's and I ask, how can I show this to myself? And remember when I first talked about the five A's, I said that when we look for the kingdom within, instead of outside of ourselves, when we start with trying to find a way to love ourselves, this is how. Focus on my own needs as legitimate, accept myself as I am, appreciate, and so forth. Everybody see the way that works? So it would never be that the five A's are just about how we love others. It will always be about how we also love ourselves. Gloria?
Yeah, I was thinking if you could explain and maybe parse a little bit behavior versus, let's see if I can explain this. I know when I worked for a treatment center, one of the things they talked about was separating the behavior from the person, the deepest part of that person. Because when you say you, you're whatever you want to say about the issue, you're taking the whole person, everything about it, rather than saying the behavior. When you jumped in the pool at 5 o'clock and had a bottle in your hand, it looked like you'd been drinking or something like, you know, you explain the behavior. So this comes about when you're doing an intervention or something like that. And when we did this at a high school, we had compassionate interventions for the kids. And they even used it later for failing grades. But what you do is you probably know this, Dave, you take somebody, it's a loving thing to do, but it's more like tough love. And loving them enough so they may be angry with you, but you care more about their welfare and their future, but you are judging their behavior. Okay. I don't know if that fits in here, but I think it's an important thing because a lot of people have dealt with unacceptable behavior.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Gloria. You've expressed it very well. But let me also refer you, because this comes up a lot, the topic of judging. So I decided to distinguish between judging and assessing, which is what you were doing with the kids. You were making an assessment about how they were harming themselves. So if you look at the bottom of 28, I won't go through it now, but that's where I make my distinctions. There's a difference between judging someone in a negative way and making an intelligent assessment. So you judge someone when you make him wrong and bad, but you assess when you say the emperor has no clothes or there's an elephant standing in the living room. So you're giving an assessment. As a witness, that's one of the distinctions I have on page 29. When you're acting like the jury, You're judging, but when you're acting like a witness, you're assessing. When you're acting like when you're a judge, you come up with a verdict, whereas when you're an assessor, you simply comment on the accountability. It's a form of communication about the truth of the matter. See the difference? So if you go down that list, that's also the difference between an unloving way of coming at people and a loving way. And that would be the tough love, which you see on the right. Yes, with an attitude, right. Okay, well, our time is almost up, and I do want to end with a poem. So we've opened up the topic this time, and each time we meet, we'll be going deeper into it, and we're going to start with the big question, how can we love ourselves? That's on 42. So we're going to begin with that next time. And I'm aware that we were taught to love yourself as selfish. So we want to find a way to love ourselves without it being thought of as selfish. So this poem is by George Herbert. He was an Anglican priest, and in this poem he has a conversation with the angel of love who appears to him. The name of the poem is Love, and you're going to hear the conversation back and forth between love and the poet. And this will bring up the topic that I mentioned briefly before, of how scary it is to be loved. And you'll see how in the course of the poem the angel sets the poet more at ease. Love bade me welcome, but my soul drew back, guilty of dust and sin. But quick-eyed love, observing me grow slack from my first entrance in, drew nearer to me, sweetly questioning if I lacked anything. A guest, I answered, worthy to be here. You shall be he, said love. I, the unkind, the ungrateful? Ah, my dear, I cannot look on thee. Love took my hand, and smiling did reply, who made the eyes but I? True, Lord, but I have marred them. Let my shame go where it doth deserve. Now you must sit down, said love, and taste my meat. So I did sit and eat. Thank you all. We have an announcement from Bob.
Thank you so much, David. We certainly appreciate it. Look forward to next week. But next week there will be, on the perimeter of the parking lot, there will be some reserve signs. So we can all move forward. Just be aware that some other parking is going on, but it should not interfere with us. Question.
Is the way that you're going to handle the next